Right, well that's fired up now. So we're all ready. My name is Ian Reynolds. It's the 4th of April 2017. I'm in the home of Neil Abbott in Egglescliff Village. So thanks for your time, Neil, for talking to us. Can you start off by saying when you were born, perhaps where, what you did for work and how you came to be living in Egglescliff Village?
Yes, I was born November the 25th, 1941 in Darlington. And I went to the local grammar school, and from there I joined the Northern Echo as a cub reporter. I worked there until I was 21, then transferred to the Evening Gazette at Middlesbrough at Bishop Auckland to concentrate on sport. I spent some time there and through to 1966, when I was seconded to work from head office for the coverage of the World Cup. And I duly covered the matches at Ayresome Park, including the most famous result of that period, when North Korea shocked Italy and beat them 1-0 with a goal by Pat DeWick. And after that time, head office decided that they wanted me to work in Middlesbrough, so they gave me a couple of months to move from Bishop Auckland to the Middlesbrough area. Didn't really fancy Middlesbrough as a town in which to live, so one afternoon a friend of mine, as I don't drive, drove me around this area, and I spotted the house in Egglescliff, fancied it, shook hands with the owner after agreeing a price. And so I've been here since May of 1967. I've enjoyed the village life. It's been superb here. And I think I'll only go out feet first.
What did the village as a whole look like when you first arrived? Because there's a lot of places are rendered and painted white now around the green.
Yes.
Was it like that at first?
No, the property was very old property, and the people who lived in it were also very old, so they couldn't really afford to do much to it. I think the people who've come in since have had a bit more capital and have invested it in the property and smartened the place up quite considerably. That's not to say that the old folk neglected it, but they just didn't have the cash to spend on it. But it was a way of life which was totally different in those days. I can recall that there are only four cars around the village green, and I think there's probably about 74 cars around the village green now. But the old folk then used to pop down to Yarmouth, the shops, and nobody used to bother to lock the doors. Now, life's changed considerably since then. But I think it's still a safe place to live. But the old folk were brilliant people, even though they took a bit of getting used to. I mean, I think I was told the first week I arrived here that it would take 25 years before I'd be accepted as a villager. I think I said at the time I'd give them a fortnight. But, walking around with a border collie as I did, I used to stop and chat to people and got to know them quite well, and I think I was accepted long before the 25-year apprenticeship.
Yeah. In those days, I imagine most people had coal fires.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, that was the norm. I mean, I remember going from here to the Gazette office in Middlesbrough, and I couldn't see across the side of one side of the road to another, because every property in that area, there were terraced houses, and the smoke from the chimney just obliterated.
Yeah,
it was smog, as we called it then.
Yeah,
but you didn't get smog around the village, but you got plenty of acrid-smelling smoke, which wasn't very pleasant.
Yeah, there was a shop and a post office somewhere in the village.
Yes, yes. Two sisters ran the post. The post office cum shop was run by the Doughty sisters, and then it was taken over by the Hardy family. Jean Hardy used to run it throughout the day, and occasionally her husband, Norman, used to help out. It's the home in which Janet Hardy, the daughter, now lives. on the green, and then Rose Terrace. But it was a great place to be. It was the sort of place you could pop into, not just for stamps. They also stocked bacon, eggs, bread, necessities, tins of food and things like that. So if you ever ran out of anything, you didn't always have to go down to Yarm. You could just pop in and have it. You never got out without a conversation, so it would take half an hour to buy some egg and bacon. But never mind, that was that was lovely. Really,
it would be quite small, was it?
Oh yes, yes. It was just you stepped inside the porchway, and on the left hand side was where she kept the stamps, and then the counter was it was a tiny little little room. But they had shelves where they stocked the food, the bread, tins of beans and things like that. It was tiny, but it was well stocked.
Right. And what about the pub? Was that still going strong in those days?
Oh, yeah, yes, it got stronger and stronger after I arrived. I was a regular, shall we say. But it was part of the village life again. Edith Abbey took over the running of the place after her husband Charlie died, and she kept it going quite well. But she ran it with her sister, who was a widow, but both were getting on. And occasionally Edith would go for a nap in the afternoon and sleep in. And I know one of the regulars was a chap called Bert Dodsworth. He was the manager of the local bakery at Jackson's the Bakers, and he was often, having worked in hot atmosphere, he would arrive at 5 o'clock, press the bell, no response. So occasionally, he would pester Edith to have a key cut so he could open up, and she relented in the end. So he got this key, and for the first 2 hours of an evening, we used to serve ourselves and serve anyone else who came into the pub. No fancy cocktails, anything like that. It was a pint or a gin and tonic. And that worked quite well. She used to come down at 7:30, say, "Is this all mine?" And scoop the money into her lap and then empty it into the till. And then in the end she said, "I don't know why you lads just don't operate the till yourselves." So we did. And she never lost a penny. But I think the funniest thing was that when she died and Frank Morley took over the running of the pub, we were sat there one night, and Bert Dodsworth, he used to have this enormous bunch of keys, as you can imagine, manager of a bakery, and he peeled off one, tossed it behind the bar, and Frank caught it and said, "What's this?" He said, "It's a key to your front door." Frank looked absolutely astonished. He said, "How long have you had this?" He said, "Oh, it's about 2 years." And Frank said, "Oh, thanks very much." I said, "Don't worry, Frank, we've all got one." But those are happy days.
Yeah. I can't imagine the pub being run on those lines anymore.
No. Times have changed, yeah. Yes.
Were there any other characters around the village which sort of stand out as being either eccentric or well-known?
Well, I think one of the regulars in the pub at the time was Bert Bell, who was born in the village. He lived Cliff House in Church Road. He was a real character, but he was the go-to man. He was very good. He was a motor mechanic, and he used to help with breakdowns quite often. Having had several pints himself, the police would call at his house and say, "There's an Artic broken down. Can you come and the brakes had locked in the wintry weather." Said, "Can you come and help us free it, Bert?" Bert would say, "I've had half a dozen pints. I can't drive. Don't worry about it." He said, "We'll get you there and back." And so he would go out to these breakdowns, crawl underneath these long articulated lorries, free them, and then they'd take him back again. He was absolutely brilliant. But I mean, anyone else around the village who had a problem, Bert was, as I say, the go-to man. He would help out. Great-hearted fellow.
I imagine when you came in the 60s there was no gas lighting still in the village. Everything had been converted. Can you remember anything about street lighting, or was it gloomy?
No, the street lighting had gas mantles had gone, but I do recall that there was one man who held out. He was called Bill. He lived in Chantry Cottage, which was just beyond the Pot and Glass. And old Bill was a gardener. And he lived in a church house, and he was steadfastly refused to have electricity put into the house. And I always recall walking past in the night time, seeing lighting the gas mantle, gave off a brilliant light. And he lived there with his, surrounded by cats. He took in strays, and he used to tend to the rector's garden, and he trimmed the hedge round by the churchyard. He was a great character, lovely man.
Was the church fete still going on in your early days?
I think it was the time of Reverend Nelson, they used to have church fete, and they used to have a mini railway which used to run in the church grounds. That was always an attraction. I don't recall. Well, of course, I used to work every Saturday, so I never saw. I never saw what went on a Saturday.
Right.
I used to leave the house early hours and get back late. So I missed all those activities if they were held on a Saturday. I know they're held on weekends now, and they're well supported.
Mm. Did you ever attend the bonfire night, bonfires on
a regular basis? Yes, the green. It was a great attraction. That's the one thing that I think brought all the villagers together. Everybody came out. We used to mound up all. It was a great way of getting rid of garden rubbish. And it used to reach enormous heights. And then the Smith family used to put a bale of hay or straw to get it away. Mrs. Smith in those days would turn up for a ritual, lighting the bonfire about six o'clock in the evening, and the bonfire would go away merrily, burn for midday the following day. But everyone used to take part, everyone used to congregate. It was a bit chaotic, there was no organisation about it. There's fireworks going off left, right and centre, rockets included. I well recall a pal of mine putting a rocket in a milk bottle and hit the house. Fortunately, didn't go through a window, but it was one of those narrow escapes. I think he might have been in the Pot and Glass before. And, that might have had something to do with it. So there were people around the village used to make toffee apples, and they used to sell girl guides and the scouts, and the cubs used to have sausages, hot dogs on the go. It was a good night all round.
Yeah, it sounds.
But of course then somebody came in, I think health and safety, somebody mentioned public liability and were we insured, and that was the end of it. That just put the kibosh onto it.
Yeah,
it would have cost thousands of pounds, so it stopped. Yeah. Which was a sad thing in a way, but the march of time, I'm afraid.
Yeah. When you were a reporter, did you concentrate just on football?
No, I did all sports. It was mainly football and cricket, but you have to turn your hands to anything. You know, pick up a phone at times when you worked on a sports desk, somebody would ring him or something. And it could be athletics, could be golf, could be any number of things. But later on, after giving up reporting, I turned my hand to page design and sub-editing, and I was responsible for six racing pages a day when it became tabloid, and also 30 tabloid pages of junior sport, which came out on a Saturday in with the main edition.
Were there ever any people who lived in the village associated with sport that you perhaps reported on or interviewed, anything like that?
Well, I didn't actually interview Lenny Lawrence. He was the manager who took Middlesbrough from what was then the First Division into the newly formed Premiership. He was manager, but I was page designing then. But I knew I knew him by sight. He was born in Brighton. Perhaps his southern connections meant that he was a bit like a startled rabbit. I remember when Colin Wood and I, Colin used to live on the green, we congratulated him on his promotion. And he was carrying the Sunday papers back to his clubhouse on the green. And as I say, he looked like a rabbit caught in headlights. I don't think he was used to people talking to him. That was probably a sudden thing. I mean, in the North East, we do that all the time.
Yeah.
Just one of those things.
Yeah.
But the same, man, I remember that was a good day, and it's, you always get the other side of the coin. And I happened to see him the day he got fired from Middlesbrough. I didn't know it at the time, but I'd been down to Yarm for a paper, and I was returning home down Back Lane, and I saw this car coming towards me at a snail's pace. I thought, it's unusual. I looked through the windscreen, I saw it was Lenny Lawrence. I thought, but it just seemed in another world. Got back in the house, switched the television on, put the Sky Sports on, and there was the headlines. Lawrence sacked by Middlesbrough. He got the golden bullet that day, so no wonder he was feeling down.
Yeah.
But that's football life, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why people want to be football managers.
Well, he says it's well paid. You get good compensation.
Yeah.
I mean, in those days, the footballers, they used to be happy if they got a £10 a week rise in the 70s. But nowadays, £10 different. I was just talking to one of the players the other day, Jim Platty, who was Northern Ireland international. And he was telling me about the day that he went and asked for a pay rise. And Jack Charlton was the manager at the time, and Jack said, I'll give you £10. Jim said, well, I didn't see that. He said, I thought, well, £10, not a bad starting point. He said, I'll have that. And Jack just leaned back and banged on the wall behind him and said, bring that form in, Harry, he's got to sign. But these days, they go up in thousands and tens of thousands.
Yeah. Yeah. Where I live is generally now is called Wells Cottages, but you knew it as Pump Row.
Pump Row, yeah, there's Pump Cottages there, and it was always known by the regulars as Pump Row, but I think somebody decided from the council that Wells Cottage probably sounded a bit better. I don't know, but there is a Wells Cottage there, and so they put up a signpost, Wells Cottages, but it was always known as Pump Row. Everyone knew it as that.
Yeah, I've seen it as a postal address as well. So quite why it was changed,
you have to ask the council, but the council baffled me with over many decisions there.
Yeah, I think that's a subject.
We don't want to go down that route.
No.
I think it's only this is a short interview, isn't it?
Well, we don't.
I'm not alone.
No, indeed. Indeed. Are there any other recollections you want to give us?
No, I think.
I think
that just about covers it. To be
honest. Yeah. It's been very, very useful to know about some of these other people, and thank you for your time.
Pleasure. Enjoyed it. Thanks very much.